I'm going to be speaking today about bale quality or impact of storage condition on fiber quality. And just to keep myself on track here, although I shouldn't take the whole time, will. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Chanel Forche, Gary Gamble, who many of you recall from Clemson, who's hanging out in Athens playing with chickens now, Jim Rogers, Leon Sweet, Al French, and of course, Vicky Martin. This early part of this presentation is very similar to what I presented last year, but go over a little refresher. You know, cotton's being stored longer and longer between ginning and textile processing as it's going overseas now. The average time's about 18 months before cotton is consumed at the mill floor, and in a lot of cases, it's even longer. You know, China has their lovely surplus and reserve in-house. What's happening, though, is we're seeing a change in color sometimes, not often, but sometimes, specifically plus B, and that's a problem for systems like EFS, where you're controlling your laydown based on the color measurements and other fiber properties provided during classing, and when all of a sudden you go to run your cotton, and that's not the same anymore, that's an issue. Again, as I said, though, it's unpredictable. It may not be exactly age-related. We've run old cottons before. Storing cotton for a long time is nothing abnormal. Had a gentleman today ask me if I want to buy Pima cotton. He's got a couple of shipping containers full for the last couple of years because he hasn't gotten the price offer that he wants. So this has been looked at before. Back in 2011, Ed Hughes looked at a storage of Pima cotton. That color change is a little different. Tends to be UV light on the outside of the bale. They're storing the bales outside a lot of times out west. Gary Gamble looked at this in 2007, 2008, and he was looking at the Maillard reaction, which is kind of key to this whole presentation in a minute. But it goes back to the 60s and 50s. Cable and Nickerson were looking at it as well, especially, you know, we use physical standards for cotton, and, well, if the color changes, that's kind of a problem when we're measuring color. But like I said, this work is based on Gary's work on the Maillard reaction. But to look at it again, you know, color change over time. We happen to be lucky in New Orleans. We have some really old bales that have been sitting around for a long time, and they were tested first in 2001 and retested in 2004. And you can see over that 3-4 year period, all of the cottons did shift plus B, and they kind of break out into two groups. Some shifted around 2 plus B units, some shifted around 4. A year later, they were tested again. Some didn't really shift, and some shifted quite a bit more still. And then they were tested 5 years later still. Or you look over the total 10-year period, and you can see basically some shifted 2 or 3 plus B units, and some shifted about 5 or 6 plus B units. Should be noted we did have a little high humidity event during that time where our warehouse had 6 feet of water sitting in it, but these bales were all nice and high at the top of the warehouse. Again, it's an issue for mills where you're laying down 40 or 50 bales, even more sometimes, and you're trying to achieve a consistent distribution of fiber properties. If the altered plus B, you know, is present, it can cause appearance defects in the yarn packages as well as the gray fabrics and all the way into the finished fabric. This problem doesn't just go away with bleaching. It can be quite dramatic from what some examples we've seen from industry. Like I said, in the yarn packages, it'll even show up as a bullseye or a tree ring. When you look at these large yarn packages from ring spinning, where you go back and build up these large packages, and you'll start to see color variations throughout that package. That no one wants to buy that. That hits a knitter's, you know, loading dock, and they're screaming. Now, interestingly, sometimes, even though we can see this in the gray fabric, when you bleach the fabric, we've heard reports the problem disappears. You can no longer see it. And you think, okay, problem solved. Go ahead, you dye your fabric, and it's back. So, you know, it's always fun when problems don't want to be consistent. So last year we talked about this little immediate solution that Jim Rogers came up with back in 2012, using a handheld instrument to collect an updated plus B reading and pop that into your database. It solves the symptom, not the problem. You know, you can readjust your laydowns and your mix, and you know, the problem seems to have gone away, but not really. It's still there. You've just shuffled things around. So last year we talked about the beginning of this study where we took 12 bales of cotton from one module, which is Delta Pine 0912, which is a real popular, very white cotton. It was all grown commercially, and it was ginned commercially. So this is not like a small plot. This was, you know, a large field study. We took one module from the same field of the same cultivar and put it through the gin stand, with our module right behind it to avoid any contamination issues. And then we took the first 12 bales out of that second module. We had three storage conditions inside of a standard cotton shipping warehouse, Staple Cotton in Indianola, Mississippi. We also used a shipping container sitting in the parking lot outside of that warehouse. And then we also put bales into a cold storage facility in Greenville, Mississippi. And we stored them for 18 months, since, as I said, that's the average time from ginning to consumption. It was all good, normal cotton, you know, a little high on the micronair, but again, typical of the Delta right now. 31 color, you know, we're looking at a plus B of 8.1 to 8.5 across those bales. So we put data loggers in with the bales and all the different storage conditions to see what's happening with the temperature and humidity. And then once we got those bales out of storage, we did very detailed collection of the fiber for fiber quality. And then we also ran these bales through all the way through processing trials to finished fabric. If anyone wonders, the shipping container in the Delta gets quite hot. That is about a 3-month period where it was up over 120 to 130 degrees in that shipping container. That's hot. That'll do you. So we definitely got the temperature that we were looking for, because part of Gary's thought was that, you know, we're not, when we talk about Maillard reaction, we're usually talking high elevated temperatures, but he was thinking this might be prolonged exposure to elevated temperatures, but not super high. And we definitely achieved that. Sure enough, when we went and checked the bales in situ using the handheld instrument, we found the cold storage was still 31, the warehouse bales were still 31, but the shipping containers were 32. And this results in a loan value change, reduction in loan value, about $16 per bale. So we went ahead and pulled these bales out shortly after Beltwide last year, and we took each bale and sampled 45 fiber samples per bale. We basically, as you can see here, this is basically a side view of a bale. We took samples off the top of the bale, the bottom of the bale, the very middle of the bale, halfway between the top and middle of the bale, and halfway between the bottom and middle of the bale, each of those layers. And we took 9 samples per layer, one from each corner, 3 across the middle, and 2 kind of in. We've heard from Jimmy Knowlton and others that it's not a consistent color change throughout the bale. It's very mottled. It's very, you know, almost random. So we wanted to look at as good a distribution of that bale as possible. We also did 5 HVI tests per sample. Color was indeed the only significantly different parameter after the storage conditions. However, the color changes were correlated with storage condition, but in no way with location of the bale. They were just randomly all over the place in the bale. We also performed APHIS on all 45 samples per bale, and there were no differences found by APHIS. One bale from each storage condition was subjected to oven moisture content, and again, no correlation was found between the moisture content and the color change. So this is not, that helps rule out things like bacterial action. So again, going back to Gary's theory of Maillard reaction, he had suggested ion chromatography to look at reducing sugars. Because the Maillard reaction is this interaction between amino acids and reducing sugars, which causes yellowing. You know, you're most familiar with it in browning and cooking, as those sugars cook off. So we took one bale from two of the storage conditions, the cold storage freezer and the shipping container, and Chanel Forche went over to Athens, Georgia, and hung out there for about a month testing all these samples. And she was looking at glucose and fructose. And if you look here, the shipping container had about 14.4 parts per million of glucose, while the cold storage was 26 parts per million. So definitely a difference there. Fructose, similar, 11.7, 11.8 parts per million from the shipping container samples, and 15.3 in the cold storage samples. So that would seem to indicate that Gary's on the right track here, that we are definitely seeing differences in the sugars. So okay, they're going somewhere. It's probably an interaction of amino acids. The work on measuring that amino acids is still underway. So we also took and we processed all these cottons. So, okay, they have a color difference, but do they actually process any differently? That was a lot of the question, especially if we're affecting the sugars. What's that really going to do? So when we sampled these bales, we made 4 mini bales out of each of the bales. And then we took one mini bale from each of the 12 bales, and then we took and made 3 blends as well. and we try to get as representative a range of cotton as possible. So we had a plus B range of 7.3 to 10.0 on the 100% mini bales, and then we blended a 7.4 and a 10.0, an 8.0, and a 9.9, and an 8.0, and a 9.5. We ring spun 40s count yarn, which was a little fine for the micro, a little high count for the micronair, but we were really looking to see if we're going to see any differences in drafting forces, spinning efficiency, uniformity, strength, any of the typical yarn properties. We also made knit and woven fabric out of this and take it all the way through finishing, as I said. And we're looking at the product color in the gray fabric after scouring, after bleaching, and then into dye, and looking for dye variation. So we're doing an assortment of colors on these fabrics. There were no statistical differences found in drafting force. We used draftometer to measure drafting force of the roving of every sample. We saw no statistical differences in uniformity, either CV, thin spots, thick spots, yarn nips, and no differences in tensile properties. Now, spinning efficiency, which basically we look at how many ends break during over 1,000 spindle hours, and we saw no statistical differences, but you can see that there appear to be differences, but really the numbers are so variable. The blends had no ends down over well over 1,000 spindle hours. The shipping container, which you would think would be the worst one, was only really out of the four reps, one had one end down, and the rest had none. The warehouse had 2.5, and the freezer had 5. But statistically, they're not different, and I really don't think there's any practical differences there. So we've gone ahead and we've woven the fabrics and knit the fabrics. We looked at the gray knit fabrics color. The finishing is actually underway this week. That our finishing guy had taken an extended vacation. It's a little hard to get finishing done when he's not there. But you can see here that the storage condition versus B-Star, which is a spectrometer's kind of version of a plus B unit, there is indeed a difference between the storage condition on the finished fabrics. And Delta E-Star is a composite color measurement. It takes all the three dimensions of color and groups them together. And that results more in visual differences. And there were indeed some differences between the warehouse and the container, and the blends are kind of in the middle there. So, as I said, the color change is intermittent. It's unpredictable. It's definitely a threat because, you know, we're exporting our cotton, and if it's not what we say it is, that really makes people, it gives them ammunition to question our marketing system. And, you know, our one of our main strengths of our, besides our quality, is that we guarantee and stand by our quality. It does indeed appear that Gary's on the right track, that the Maillard reaction is responsible. But like I said, there is a little bit more work left to kind of confirm that. And then we've got some future ideas planned to definitely confirm it again. And so like I said, once we identify it, then the question becomes, well, what do we do about it? And, well, that's a whole other question, and Vicky's rolling her eyes at me. I'd like to thank Cotton Incorporated for their financial support, and I'd like to thank Buddy Cochran for both growing the cotton, harvesting the cotton, and ginning the cotton, and letting us run around as gin and have some fun. So, any questions? Great. Thank you very much.